Fido.
May it please the court. Stephen Fido on behalf of the appellant, the Bank of America. It is somewhat odd to be standing before you this morning without opposing counsel.
I've always assumed that this was every lawyer's dream position.
I will, if you wish, run down and sit over there.
Well, then I'd have formidable opposition indeed, Your Honor. But I'm not here without opposition. The real opposition, and indeed it is formidable opposition, is a long line of cases reaching back close to 15 years. Court decisions that...
All in district courts, I take it.
All in district courts.
Any of them reach the Court of Appeals before this?
They have reached the Courts of Appeals, but have not been decided in the Courts of Appeals. The Courts of Appeals have resolved the matter on other grounds. So it has never been addressed, this perceived conflict between the two preemption sections of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which are Section 1681HE, which I'll refer to as Section H, and 1681TB2F, which I'll refer to as Section T. The courts have perceived a conflict between the preemption provisions of those two sections and have, some of them at least, including the district court in this case, have resolved that conflict by essentially creating a bifurcated system of enforcement under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, in which Section T preempts only state statutory claims, and all other claims, common law claims, are
well,
subject to
I will confess, Mr. Fido, that I haven't read all of the district court opinions, but I assume you have. It's the curse of counsel, I suppose. Do any of the district court opinions discuss the Erie Doctrine? I mean, what the district court did here in saying that the word laws refers only to statutes and not to decisional laws sounds like a violation of the Erie Doctrine. That's what Swift against Tyson said the Rules of Decision Act meant. And it got overruled by Erie, which said that Swift was not only wrong but also unconstitutional in limiting the word laws to statutory laws as opposed to decision. The district court's discussing Erie?
Not that I can recall, Your Honor, and it would have come...
Basically, that position seems to be Swift against Tyson again.
I agree, Your Honor. I agree, Your Honor. The distinction that is made between law and laws simply can't hold up. It can't hold up under Erie.
The distinction between singular and plural is also inconsistent with the Dictionary Act, which says they're the same thing.
Correct. So the distinctions that have been made, I think, are driven not by consideration of Erie, not by consideration of the text of FCRA, but rather seem to be driven by the body of decisional law that has developed in the last 15 years. That is, it seems impossible now for a district court to really address this problem on the terms of the Act itself, but rather each district court seems to be drawn into this debate as to this perceived conflict between H and T. In so doing, the resolution of this conflict vitiates the preemptive purpose of Section T and greatly expands, even transforms, the scope of Section H. And the result is that preemption under FCRA, Congress's intent to provide preemption of claims against furnishers of credit information, that purpose is stood on its head. Section T, which was adopted in 1996, is clear on its face. Even the cases where district courts have have limited the scope of Section T have acknowledged that on its face, Section T seems clear. Congress intended to restrict the kinds of claims that could be brought against furnishers of credit information. And within those restrictions, there were further limitations. Certain kinds of claims can only be brought by governmental agencies, while private citizens can bring claims only after the furnisher of information has been advised by the consumer reporting agency that some information may be inaccurate. And then there's a private right of action if they fail to act. So it's very broad and does apply to certainly it does preempt all state law claims. Section H, on the other hand, well, I shouldn't say on the other hand, Section H also appears to be rather broad in its scope, preempting claims for defamation, invasion of privacy, and negligence, except if the guilty party has acted maliciously. And Section H, which was adopted in 1970, some 25 or 26 years prior to Section T, was read up to the point of the adoption of Section T as consisting of no more than that. You can bring a state law claim for defamation, etc., if malice can be alleged and proved. But courts, I think, have overlooked other provisions of H, which really demonstrate that H is much more limited in scope, and that is that H provides preemption in cases that are based on disclosures that come within 1681G, H, and M. Post-1996, no court that has looked at that part of Section H, no court has found a way that a furnisher could be covered by the disclosures or could be subject to the disclosures that are discussed in subsections G, H, and M. All courts have found that the furnisher in the case could not be subject to it. And the result of that, Your Honors, the result of that narrowing is to say, all right, a furnisher can't be, a claim against a furnisher cannot be covered by subsection H. Therefore, all common law claims may be asserted against furnishers. So there is no preemption of common law claims as to furnishers. That's what the district court in this case decided, and that district court was by no means alone. That is the fundamental problem in the way decisional law has, or at least one strain of decisional law, has developed in this matter. What the rationale is that if that by allowing some claims, by disallowing some claims, Section H impliedly allows others. And by that rationale, the courts have decided that that as to furnishers, all cases, all common law claims that are not specifically preempted by H can go forward. Well, that flies directly in the teeth of Section T. It is absolutely contrary to anything that can be discerned from the legislative history about congressional intent regarding preemption here. And the debate among the courts about how to reconcile these two sections really is an unnecessary debate. The purpose of statutory construction is to discern the intent of the legislature. The intent of the legislature to preempt such claims is manifestly clear. My client is asking that this court put an end to this debate. It's not gratuitous flattery or fulsome praise to say that when this court decides this issue, the debate will be resolved.
Thank you very much, counsel.
And thank you for your time and attention this morning.
Taken under advisement.